milk, cheese, and baked goods. And, of course, cooking basics and tools of the trade for everyone at home. Home Goods of Margaretville. Open Wednesday through Saturday, 11 to 5, 845-586-4177 or hgom.net.
WIOX is supported by the Fierce Grizzly Groceries and Provisions in Roxbury for healthy food and basic necessities for a fearless life in the hills, including fresh local foods, produce, meats and fish, condiments, grains and coffee, basic sundries, and vegan and gluten-free products. The Fierce Grizzly Groceries and Provisions, Main Street in Roxbury, planning on opening this spring. TheFierceGrizzly.com.
Hi, I'm Don Matheson, host of Vantage Point, heard every other Friday at 1 o'clock here on WIOX Roxbury. Live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20. And everywhere at WIOXradio.org.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and MTC Cable Channel 20, and at 107.5 FM on the campus of SUNY Delhi on smart devices through the Radio FM app and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate. This is From the Forest. Every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m., talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Oh, things are good. How are you, Ryan?
I'm all right. What have you been up to?
Well, I did a little turkey hunting this past weekend since season opened. No luck.
Why not?
I don't know. Across the board, everybody I talked to said birds were not cooperative, not many gobbles were heard, and I didn't hear of any that were taken. So I guess it's a little slow for turkeys yet. But we did have snow on, Thursday afternoon? Something like that. So maybe that played a factor in the spring turkey.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Shut her down a little bit,
I guess.
Well, everything's flowering down in Kingston. I spent some time down by the Rondout, and the red buds are in full flower down there. Magnolia's already passed. Pear is just about, they should be getting fertilized. Flowers are fully out. My apple buds or flowers are just starting, and I got flowers on my pawpaws for the first time. They are ugly flowers, man. They're a stinky maroon flower that looks like something dead's growing on it, but it's a flower, nonetheless.
Well, maybe what pollinates them?
I think it's ants and beetles, but I don't remember. You really should take a brush and cross-pollinate. I'm not going to do that, but yeah, that's really what you should do.
Okay.
With them.
Yeah, well, I know there's some plants out there that smell like dead animals, right? And they're pollinated by flies, so I wondered.
It might be. It might be one of those. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's an ugly one, but a cool fruit.
Well, I spent the weekend up at our camp near Balsam Lake Mountain at 2,200 feet, and let me tell you, there's nothing happening there.
No.
my dad got the lawnmower out and mowed the lawn, and everybody looked at him like, what are you doing? And yeah. It was brown like the end of March.
Oh, yeah?
And it was a different world, absolutely.
Yeah. Jeez.
So,
no kidding.
There was that.
Yeah, I mowed my lawn the 1st of May, and it's grown back considerably since then.
Yeah, I mowed mine too. Well, put it this way. I was there Friday night after work and had dinner with the guys, but I had to work Saturday, so I drove home. And driving home, just leaving camp, I had whiteout conditions to the point where I almost had to stop the truck.
Come on.
I could hardly see the road, but only for like 100 to 200 feet in elevation. Yeah. Once you dropped out of the top of that crest of that hill there, it was pretty much just to rain.
I didn't have that, but it had some flying snow down where I was.
Yeah.
That day, well, but yeah.
Yeah. 2,200 feet. So it was resembling winter there.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. But tonight we're talking about Sap and Syrup Beyond Maple with Crooked Chimney's David Moore. And let me see if I can get him on. David, are you there?
I am, yeah. Hey, how's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm good.
So where are you calling from, David?
I'm calling from my house in Lee, New Hampshire.
Lee, New Hampshire. Now, what part of New Hampshire is that?
it's right near the University of New Hampshire. It's about 20 minutes west of Portsmouth.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Is that near Kentuckook? That's the only place I know of.
We're about, I would say, 45 or 50 minutes from Kentuckook.
All right, nowhere near. So anyway, doesn't matter. So first of all, tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into making syrup other than maple and whatever, how you got into the woods and stuff. What got you interested in all this stuff?
Sure. I studied horticulture as an undergraduate, and my senior year I had to do either an internship or some sort of research project, and so something to do with plants, basically. And so I had to. So what I decided to do was I heard about people making birch syrup in Alaska, and I knew that nobody did around here, and so I thought maybe for my research project I will just tap a few different species of birch that we have around here, paper birch, black or sweet birch, and then yellow birch. And, so for my research project, I basically was just interested in figuring out which of those trees had the sweetest sap, you know, and so I measured sap sugar content every 3 days throughout the sugaring season, and it turns out that, on average, paper birch has about twice the sugar content that the other two do. So paper birch turned out to be like between 1 and 1.2, again on average, and then yellow birch and black birch were both around like 0.5 or 0.6 degrees Brix.
Yeah, so. I wish I knew that because I think I tapped birch trees coincidentally the same time you did in 08, now that I think about it.
Oh, no way.
Yeah,
oh, cool.
I did. It was the one and only year I did it, and I did it with black birch and white birch, but it was mostly black birch. Yeah. I don't know.
That's cool.
I made a lot of mistakes, but anyway, so that's when you did it. Was 2008? Was making birch?
That was the first year I made birch syrup. Yep.
And so what's the deal with this Crooked Chimney?
I actually kind of continued that research project on through the next year, 2009, too, so I had 2 years of data, and they were both pretty similar, if I remember correctly. But at that point, I kind of figured out how to produce syrup, and I was, you know, at that point in my life, I was working a lot of seasonal jobs, and so it just made sense that I would just kind of turn this into a business. And so I started, you know, tapping a bunch of trees and then selling syrup, and so the name of my business was the Crooked Chimney because we had trouble keeping the stovepipe, you know, straight those first couple of years.
All right.
So, yeah.
Now, okay, so how many taps did you had? 250 birch taps, it says, and 100 sycamore taps.
Yeah, that was at our biggest. So we kept kind of growing birch a little bit every year. And then the last few years, we always had about, you know, 220 or 250, somewhere in there. Sycamore was a different story. Totally random, totally weird, but I can't remember which year it was. It was like maybe 2013 or 14, one of those years. I put one sycamore tap out. It was on a, you know, there's an ornamental sycamore, a hybrid sycamore, the London plane tree.
Yeah, yep.
And so I tapped one of those, and there were a couple really warm January thaw days, no vacuum or anything, and I harvested so much sap, and I made a little bit of syrup from that, from just that one tap, that one tree, and just those 2 days. And then so the next, and the sap was, the syrup was really good. It was delicious. And so the next year, I got really, really excited about sycamore syrup, and I set out 100 sycamore taps, and this time they were all on, you know, the native, the floodplain species, the American sycamore. And again, no vacuum. And I harvested from those 100 taps throughout the whole season, very, very little sap, and I didn't get enough to make syrup from, so it blew my mind, and it's been puzzling me ever since. And so finally, now that I'm a grad student, I'm able to explore these questions a little more. I have a little bit better of an idea of what's going on, but... So yeah, so even though I say that I had 100 sycamore taps, you know, you can kind of take that with a grain of salt based on what I just told you.
Wow. Man, that's a lot of taps. Did not have much sap.
Yeah, I have a similar experience to that.
Yeah?
Yeah. Well, I mean, so we've talked about this many times on this show. So Gary Mead, you don't know him, but he's familiar to our listeners here. He's on the show once a month, and... We were able to pick him up from the show a couple of years ago and pick him up at his house and said, guys, you got to taste this. So he had somehow heard about sycamore syrup, and he threw a few buckets on a few trees near his house. And he gave us just a few eyedroppers full of syrup because he had made so little. He didn't have enough to really give us a great taste. But, oh, man, was it delicious. Like you said, it tasted just like butterscotch candy melted down. We actually thought he was messing with us that it was melted down butterscotch, but... He said, no, that's sycamore syrup. So Ryan and I decided to tap some trees, and I continued it for like 2 years after that. And I had the same experience. There was one day, and I think it was a January thaw, rainy day, that I got quite a bit. But what I made resembled so much more like honey than anything else. Still good, but not the butterscotch that I had tasted. And the following year, I never boiled. Same thing. I had buckets out for almost 2 months straight, and I never boiled. So
here.
That's the last I did anything with it.
What a strange tree.
Wow, yeah, that's interesting.
Huh. So currently, you're a doctoral student at UNH, and you're measuring sap flow in basswood, beech, birch, hickory, poplar, and sycamore trees.
Yeah, and actually... we have measured sap flow in all of those trees during, you know, during the winter dormant period, but I've also monitored lots of other deciduous hardwoods that we have around here, including some smaller things like shrubs and vines. So I've got data on alders and hop hornbeam and ash and kiwiberry and hornbeam and several other things as well. I can't remember all off the top of my head, but yeah.
Yeah. And your study, the basic research questions are, what conditions basically drive sap flow? And what are the anatomical and physiological features of the wood involved in the process? And what can be harvested and made into syrup, you know, from that sap? So let's get into it. I mean, let's talk about your methods, I guess, first.
Sure, yeah. So, to answer that first question, what environmental conditions drive sap flow in all these different trees? We know at this point what drives sap flow in sugar maples. They need breeze-thaw cycles, and we have a pretty good idea about birches, too, right? It's a little later in the spring, so warmer temperatures and probably some starch-to-sugar hydrolysis, but on all these other trees, we have no idea what environmental conditions that are involved in sap flow. And so what we do is we install these little sap flow sensors into these trees. They're really cool. The way they work, it's these three little needles you stick into the tree, and the middle one, the three, you know, they're all in a vertical line, very close to each other, up the tree. And so the middle one's a heater; it sends out a heat pulse every 15 minutes. And then the top and bottom ones are temperature sensors, thermocouples. And so you're basically tracking where in the tree this heat pulse is moving. And if it's going up, then presumably the sap is flowing up. And if it's going down, the sap is flowing down, and so on and so forth. So that's how we're measuring sap flow. And we also, along with these sensors, we also have other types of sensors, air temperature sensors, soil temperature sensors, different things to give us environmental data so that we can see, when the sap flows in these trees, what environmental conditions are actually driving that sap flow.
Go ahead, John.
I was going to get right into, so what have you found? I mean, what's some interesting things that on some of these trees we just talked about? Maybe start with birch.
Yeah, sure. So, I don't know if I'll be able to go through all of them off the top of my head, but birch is very similar to, what us sugar makers see when we're producing syrup. It's, you kind of need days that are in the 50s and nights that are in the 30s. I'm not sure, for example, with maples, there's that freezing point cut off, the freezing point of water. And so if you have any temperature fluctuation that goes across that, you have a sap flow. I'm not sure if there's that rigid of a threshold in birch that, if the temperature drops over a certain thing, there's going to be sap flow or not. But, we do see, 50s in the day and 30s at night. It's just a little bit later in the spring, get good sap flow. A lot of the other species, beech, sycamore, what else? Kiwiberry. We have at UNH, there's a professor who does kiwiberry breeding, hardy kiwis. They're really good, and he breeds them, and so he let me put some sensors on them one year. But anyway, several of these species that I'm looking at are also all freeze-thaw driven. And then some of the stuff in the birch family that I've looked at, for example, hop hornbeam is also kind of like birch in that it's a little bit later in the season, so slightly warmer temperatures.
Any idea why?
Yeah, so that's that's getting into the second question, right? Like, what's going on in the wood that's causing this, right?
Yeah.
And no, I don't. We haven't really started working on this question yet. This is going to be kind of, at least in my mind, kind of the next step after we have all this data to see when it's happening. Now we're going to try to figure out why it's happening. So, people have kind of done this work in, I guess I'd call them sort of the three big syrup-producing genera, maples and birches and walnuts, the ones that people are most familiar with, I guess. So this work has been done in those three, but not in any others. So, yeah, hopefully over the next several years I'll be able to answer those questions.
So the season for birch is about 2 to 3 weeks, I have written down from what you've said in the past, and it's about 4 to 6 weeks typically with maple. It doesn't need to freeze at night, and paper birch is twice as sweet as black and yellow birch. So is that correct so far?
Yep.
All right, and the black and yellow birch are about 1.5% to 0.6% on average sugar content.
Yeah, at least the year or two that I did that study, they were, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And at one, just for reference for people, 1% would be like 86 to 1, 85 to 1. Is that right? Or no?
Yep.
Okay.
Yep, for maples, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is something I did not know at all, is you're saying that you should only use plastic and stainless steel to harvest the sap. How come?
Yeah,
for
so...
For birch.
For birch, also for sycamore, and I'm not sure if there's other species that require this too, but certainly for sycamore, I've made this mistake. So if you boil down birch or sycamore sap in, like, for example, an aluminum pot, or if you use, some galvanized equipment to harvest sap, the sap is really acidic, and so it actually dissolves some of the metal. And it imparts this really, really terrible, really awful, like metallic off flavor to the syrup. And it's really unpalatable. So yeah, you should definitely stay away from those things. Hmm. And with maples, it doesn't matter at all.
Amazing.
And with the birch, sounds like you made quite a bit of it, right? If you've had 250 taps each year. Can you tell us anything about the difference in boiling birch versus boiling maple syrup and things you've learned?
Sure, yeah. So as far as, like, the boiling process goes, the evaporation process, birch sap is a lot more temperature sensitive than maple sap. And this is just kind of from what I understand from reading about it. So in maple sap, the primary sugar in there is sucrose, like table sugar. And that has a very high, I don't know, boiling point, melting point or scorching point. I don't exactly remember, but in birch sap, there's not that much sucrose. It's actually mostly fructose and glucose, maybe a little bit more fructose than glucose. And fructose, it has a much lower temperature that you have to be concerned with. So, you know, looking back on how I used to do things, now I'm, you know, in theory a little bit wiser. So, but back then I didn't use a reverse osmosis machine, so the way I sort of went about, and I also didn't have a propane evaporator. I was using wood, and so what I did was I didn't use soft wood. I used hardwood that would burn a little bit cooler, and I just tried to really manage how hot that fire would get. And so it was a little bit more work, but I would, you know, for anybody listening who is contemplating making birch syrup, I would highly, highly encourage reverse osmosis, because you can concentrate your sap a lot without even using any heat. So that's great. And then just at the end, the last little bit, you can put some heat to it to get a little caramelization to it, which is desirable. But you just have to be, yeah, so just with birch, you do have to kind of keep an eye on the temperature.
I guess why so? Does that change the flavor? You mentioned scorching of the sugars, so that makes a burnt flavor, I would assume?
Yeah, it can taste a little bit burnt. It's the burnt off flavor is certainly not as bad as the metallic one. The metallic one is just totally unpalatable, but the burnt one is, you know, it's not great, but it's okay. I mean, you could still cook with it, you could still marinate meat with it, and it would be perfectly fine. Mm.
So do you do a rolling boil, or are you saying you do it lighter, you simmer it more?
Yeah, I was. It was kind of a long process. I was simmering. Yeah.
Yeah. And what's it taste like?
Birch syrup?
Yeah.
I guess the thing I would compare it with mostly would be molasses. A little bit fruity, maybe a little bit of raspberry. I kind of think there's a little bit of, like, miso flavor in there, but I haven't met anybody else who agrees with me on that. So.
So what do you think? What do you think the market is for it? You think there's a strong demand for it? And if so, what demand? Where's it coming from?
Yeah, there is. So the first couple years I was making this stuff, it was kind of tough to move. But then we had, I don't know what happened, but we had, like, kind of a big media year, and all of a sudden I just couldn't make enough of the stuff, and I would sell out very quickly. At first I was doing, like, some, because back then, you know, nobody was making this around here in the Northeast anywhere, even out where you are, I think, except just as a hobby, maybe. So, when I started, I was kind of trying to generate some interest by doing some sampling, giving out samples at farmers markets and some specialty grocery stores, and meeting with chefs and trying to share this new flavor with some chefs around here who are very excited about working with local produce and local food. So, but ultimately, I think when the word got out about it, you know, there's, of course, in the Northeast, there's a lot of interest in pure maple syrup. And so when people hear that you can make syrup from different types of trees, I think they get pretty excited about that, especially when they hear there's, you know, these different flavors, and it's still sweet, and it's still sort of like a, you know, kind of a sweet treat.
Yeah, and it seems like it's mostly for cooking is what you're saying, instead of, like, as, you know, standalone on ice cream is what you're saying, or you can do it that way?
Yeah, I certainly both with birch, yeah.
Okay. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is sap and syrup beyond maple with Crooked Chimneys' David Moore. And, yeah, we're talking about things other than the maple tree about making syrup into. So let's do one more before break. What about beech? Let's go into beech. I didn't know anything about beech. So go ahead. Have at it.
Beech, yes. So that's a good one. So beech is one of the many trees that back in the day when I was producing syrup, I would try to tap without vacuum, and I'd never harvest sap from it. And so the past, I've made birch syrup this year and last year. And so you need a vacuum pump. And when you're using a vacuum pump, the beech sap runs, you know, kind of the same time as maples based on freeze-thaw cycles. Maybe it starts a little bit later and goes a little bit later, but generally the same period. I would say out of all the different syrups I've made, with the exception of maybe walnut, beech probably tastes the closest to maple, but it also tastes a little bit like honey. It's a little darker. I found that the sap to syrup ratio for beech, at least for this year, for me, it was about 160-1. And I think on average the sap was about 0.6 degrees Brix, if I'm remembering that correctly.
It's amazing it would even taste the same as maple with that low sugar content. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, so I have, this past year I collected a bunch of sap and syrup samples, and I've got them all stored in our lab freezer, and so I'm really excited. This summer I'm going to use this machine called the chromatograph, and it's going to, when I run these samples through it, it's basically going to be able to tell me all the different types of sugars that are in the sap and the syrup, and so I'll kind of be able to see how close it is to maple, you know what I mean?
It's amazing. I mean, you know, RO is, I think, also making this possible. And vacuum, it sounds like.
Yeah, those are, I mean, vacuum is certainly required for a lot of these things, and yeah. RO, you know, just makes sort of a higher quality product.
I mean, I can see this as a very good possibility. I mean, you find pure beech stands in it seems like in some places it could be more abundant than sugar maple, mm-hmm. if you're in the right area.
And it's not competing with timber.
Exactly, right. Like, yeah, you find that. York. Like, I was on a property today that was beautiful, beautiful timber. I talked to him about the potential for a sugar bush, too, and he was conflicted. So yeah. That would eliminate that. But, wow, so what do you think about all that? Where do you see a market going with this, if so, if any, ever?
Yeah, no, that's a really good question. I mean, yeah, it's funny that you said that, because here in New Hampshire, beech is very, very abundant, much more so than sugar maple in general. And so, you know, in an unmanaged woodlot, there's usually a lot of beech, and it's very weedy. I mean, people try to get rid of it because it's competing with all these trees that are actually worth something, right? But, you know, who knows? I mean, I guess it just kind of depends on the market. If there's a strong market for beech syrup, then it would probably be worth a few producers managing a stand for beech. It sounds almost ridiculous, but you know, if there's a demand for it, then I could see that happening.
How high a vacuum were you running? Just curious.
I didn't actually measure the vacuum level, but I can tell you I was using this little SureFlow Pentair. It's like I think it's a jacuzzi pump. It's not super powerful. I don't know exactly how much vacuum it was. I was just running it off a 12-volt battery. So
okay, so that probably wasn't producing, you know, what's capable in some of these high-end maple pumps where you can get 25 inches of mercury or greater.
Exactly.
So I'm wondering if these 316 tubing lines create natural vacuum. They typically won't go as high unless you have a really, you know, really high drop. Elevation drop, you can't really get as high of vacuum in those. So I wonder if that's a possibility. Run it from the top of the hill, which you often find beech mm-hmm. above your sugar maple stands at the top of a hill. Utilize similar equipment. Maybe you already have a maple tank at the bottom. Make your early maple and then switch over to beech.
Well, he's saying same time, though.
Well, he said maybe a little later, too. Well, you clarified it. Brian and I are arguing.
No, we're going to talk about him as if he's not here. Hey, we can ask him. Sorry, go ahead.
I would say it's mostly overlapping, whereas birch is like a totally, almost totally separate season, but beech, it's mostly overlapping with maple, even though it may run a little bit later, too.
Right. It makes you wonder, I mean, why is maple, and you probably don't know the answer to this, I don't know if anyone does, why is maple so sweet? I mean, it's drastically sweeter than other trees.
Yeah.
It really is, yeah.
What the heck's going on, man?
Right.
What's going on?
I'm not, I mean, I don't know if I can fully answer that question, but I do know a few things. I know that, well, I guess, let me ask you a question. How much time do we have? Because I can give you the long answer or the short answer.
We got 27 minutes. We're good.
Okay. Two things I can think of. Number one, when a tree goes into dormancy, particularly a deciduous tree, I think, there's a lot of, you know, trees store carbohydrates as starch. So when a tree is photosynthesizing during the growing season, it's converting a lot of sugar to starch and storing it. And then in the fall, when it enters winter dormancy, a lot of those starches are converted to sugars because it acts as kind of a cryoprotectant. It helps protect the tree against freezing, which could maybe rupture some tissue in the tree or things like that. So there's starch to sugar conversion in the fall and then back to starch in the spring. And so that's why woody tissues are often a little bit sweeter in the winter. But the other thing I was going to talk about, which may require a longer explanation, is this thing called embolism repair. So if I think I can talk about it quickly. So let's say you have a tree growing in the summer and it's going through a drought, right? There's a drought happening, and so there's not a lot of water around. So all the water that's moving from the soil up through the tree to the atmosphere, all of a sudden, you know, it's not getting water from the soil, but the atmosphere is still very dry and still calling for water. So all of a sudden, you know, maybe you have gas bubbles that form inside the tree, and these gas bubbles are called embolisms, and they're sort of detrimental to tree health if you have a lot of them, because once you have the gas bubble inside the xylem, you know, the vessels, the cells that transport water, those cells can no longer transport water. They're blocked, right? That's why we call them embolisms. So one of the mechanisms that trees have to repair embolisms is the sap flow, the sap pressurization that happens during winter dormancy. And part of that process, important in that process, are these, in some trees, are these osmotic gradients. So when the tree has lots of sugar in certain places and no sugar in other places, it creates these, you know, these water potential gradients. So water always wants to move towards sugar, away from areas where there's less sugar, right? If you think back to basic biology and chemistry. And so what I'm getting at is sugar in the sugar content in the wood during the winter is to help protect it from frost, but it's also, if you have these sap pressurization events that they're involved with, it's also helpful for repairing embolisms so that the tree, the next growing season, is all these vessels are ready to transport sap again. All the embolisms have, well, hopefully many of the embolisms have been repaired.
Amazing. Yeah, I mean, it's still weird to me, though, because beech grows in similar sites in the Catskills as sugar maple does, and many times a lot of overlap. It's just weird, you know? I mean, not only sugar maple, higher sugar content than these other trees, it's by far usually higher sugar content than within other maple species within the, you know, maple family, you know? It's just strange.
Yeah, you're right. No, I can't answer that question. That is a really good question.
Now, did you see any differences in sap flow? And, I mean, you mentioned sycamore is a little weird and wonky. Did you see any differences in beech that stuck out to you?
Well, I mean, there's less sap flow. There's much less pressure being built up inside the tree.
Even with a vacuum, though, you were finding low
flow? Well, right, you need a vacuum. Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, even with a vacuum, I would say, even with a vacuum on beech, I would say I was harvesting less sap per cap than I would have on a maple without a vacuum.
Wow. Yeah, okay.
So,
Interesting Amazing. Stuff.
All right, I lied. Let's do one more. Let's do sycamore, because I want to get this tree. No one knows anything about this. Didn't we email each other like years ago, and you had said you were doing it, and then I think I got an email from you recently, and you're like, hey, by the way, I did something with sycamore. Is that how it went?
Yeah, because I remembered that you had done it, and I wanted to ask you about it just to compare notes, because I had done it again this year, too.
Yeah, those years in between there. So tell us about sycamore. All right, so when does this thing flow? We don't know, right? What did you find out?
Yeah, so thinking back to what we were talking about earlier, I guess there must be, you know, maybe certain years where all the conditions are right, where you can actually build up enough stem pressure inside these trees so you can harvest sap without a vacuum, right? I think you were saying that your friend experienced that, right? And that's how I experienced it my first year. But I feel like that's kind of hit or miss. And so when you have a vacuum, you can pretty reliably harvest sap during freeze thaw cycles. And the really interesting thing here is that, you know, during the January thaw where I harvested all that sap without a vacuum, those were 2 days where it didn't drop below freezing. So maybe it was just the thaw that happened at the beginning and then staying warm for a while. Maybe that really helped the sap out. But when you have a vacuum, you can pretty reliably harvest sycamore sap, during freezing and thawing events, freeze thaw cycles.
Yeah, I remember because I did a little presentation on this little 20-minute PowerPoint or something. And basically the end of the PowerPoint said, I still don't know. I didn't learn anything. But
some presentation, man.
Well, I mean, I presented what I found, you know. Because the one thing that I did find that I remember writing down was it was a 36-hour thaw. And it got really warm. It was January thaw. It was in the 50s. It didn't run in the beginning, which, you know, kind of expect. Maybe it took a little while to actually thaw. But it ran a lot in the middle and then quit before the end. So it was like the middle 12 hours of that 36 hours that actually ran. So that's really what got me curious about it, is why didn't it keep running until it froze up again? It just quit.
I
think he might be onto something, though. Maybe it just needs so much pressure to get it going where it's really cold and it warmed up so fast. It
just exhausted itself?
I mean, I don't know. I'm just guessing here.
But... Yeah, me too. I don't know. Well, that's maybe another research question for you. Why did that sap only run in the middle of that 12 hours, the 36-hour thaw?
Yeah, so those 12 hours, it sounds like maybe dropped a little bit in temperature, but not enough to freeze, right?
I think it was like one of those really, really warm, like even nighttime temperatures were in the 40s. Okay. It was a really, really warm January.
Yeah.
That's really a super rainy event. Yeah, anyway. Yeah, but what I made was like honey. What did you make? So what I've heard you can range from obviously from butterscotch, which is what Ryan and I tasted from our friend, and then what I made was more like honey. What do you make?
Yeah, certainly it ranges from honey to butterscotch. Some of my housemates have described it as tangy and tart and a little bit molasses. So yeah, I guess I think in general it's a little bit lighter in color than beech and birch syrup.
Oh, see, mine was really dark.
Was it?
I wonder if it's like beech, though. You can't get it hot, because I boiled it like maple.
Right. Well, he said you can't do it in metal, too.
Yeah, I know for a fact that that you have to avoid these different metals with sycamore. I'm not sure about the temperature, though. When I'm making these different syrups, I try to use conservative methods like low heat and stainless and plastic stuff, just because if I don't want to mess up a batch. And maybe at some point we'll look more, dig into a little bit, you know, actually figure out if you need to avoid these temperatures or, you know, metals or whatever.
Okay. Because I use galvanized.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is Sap and Syrup Beyond Maple with Crooked Chimney's David Moore. So with sycamore, are you saying it's 130 to 1 I have written down, or 0.7% sugar content?
Yeah, I had 130-1 this year is the sap to syrup ratio.
This is what I don't get, too. I mean, you look at a sycamore tree, and it's got, in a lot of cases, a huge crown. And you think it would be sweeter. You know what I mean? It's got one of the biggest crowns out of any tree out there. You take a similar maple tree. First of all, there's not a maple tree as big as the biggest sycamore. But, you know, a big maple tree around here will be 33-1, sometimes 27-1. You know, in the forest, 50-1. I mean, it's just amazing. I can't believe it's not sweeter than 0.7%. I don't know.
Yeah, you're right. I don't know.
Amazing. All right, so, well, we're rocking and rolling here, and the show's flying by. What's another tree you'd like to bring up?
Well, the only other one that I've successfully made syrup from is walnut. I could talk a little bit about hop hornbeam, about hickory, about ash.
Yeah.
Do you have a preference?
Let's start with walnut. That's something you made.
Yeah. It's been a while since I've made walnut syrup, but walnut, like maple and birch, walnut's the only other one in my experience that generates enough stem pressure so you can harvest the sap without a vacuum. So that's what I did, and I guess the most interesting thing, you know, all these different species that we've been talking about, all their little quirks, their little nuances that you kind of have to be aware of, and with walnut, the interesting thing about walnuts is that the sap contains a lot of pectin, you know, the sort of sticky gel substance that you use to make jams and jellies and whatnot. So, yeah. And pectin is like a plant defense compound, so it helps plug up, wall off parts of the wood that have been infected with fungi or other things, and so it's to be expected that it ends up in the sap because it's a plant defense compound that's present in the wood. But anyway, so this walnut sap has a lot of pectin in it, and so what happens when you start to boil it down, once you boil off about half the water, you get a film of pectin that develops on the surface, and you need to filter it off. So that's kind of the one interesting thing about walnut. Other than that, it's kind of like maple. It runs during freeze-thaw cycles, and it actually kind of tastes a lot like maple, too.
Really? Yeah, I had some. It tasted good. I think Cornell was offering some, just a little spoonful. It was good. I don't know. I don't remember what it tastes like, but it was nice and sweet.
Now, to get that pectin, do you have to stop your boil out of your evaporator, run it through like a filter press or a sock filter or something like that, and then start it up again? Or can you just grab, scoop it off the top?
That's a good question. I think you could probably scoop it off the top unless you wanted to be really thorough. You could run the whole thing through a filter. But, I just made a small batch, so I didn't really have a good system for doing it. I can't remember what I did.
Yeah. I bet you could,
I guess if it floats, I don't see why you couldn't scoop it, right?
Right. Beats me.
I don't know. More questions than answers.
How about...
It was all floating, so that would make that pretty easy.
All right. Yeah. Yeah, you'd have to develop maybe some other different scoop than you already use for taking the foam and stuff off of maple, maybe. Right? I mean, I already use a scoop all the time when I'm doing my boiling.
Right. With a finer, some type of a finer screen.
Walnut could be something because it grows in pure stands. Not here in the mountains, but in the valleys, larger valleys, there's pure black walnut stands.
Yeah. Plenty, like the Finger Lakes.
Oh, cool.
Finger Lakes is full of them.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, the one thing with especially black walnut, it's so valuable for timber that you may want to think twice before you start to tap one, you know what I mean? Hmm. But once you start tapping one, maybe it's fine to continue. I don't know.
Tap hole, black walnut could be the next...
Yeah.
Next furniture market, too, you know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it could be one that's bushy and not saw log size. That's the problem in New York State is that, you know, it's always competing with timber. But, okay. What else? Ash? Ash? You're saying you're getting sap from ash?
That's the driest tree out there.
Jesus.
Well, let me talk about ash and hickory together. I've tried to tap these trees for a while, both with and without vacuum. And I've never harvested sap, even with a vacuum pump. But it's really interesting because over the years, I've we do a lot of firewood, and so I remember a couple of years ago cutting some, you know, cutting some ash and some hickory, freshly cut logs, just lying there on the field, and so the sun was hitting them. This was on, you know, the temperature was during the day was just a little bit above freezing, but still in the 30s, and there was sap bleeding, bleeding out from the ends of the logs, and so we actually tasted it. It was quite sweet. I don't know if it was because the water had evaporated a little bit from it, or if it was actually just sweet, but it was pretty sweet and really, really good. And so, yeah, I mean, that kind of made me think that, and again, this was during like February, so January and February, so times of the year when you could be making syrup, it's dormant period. But yeah, I've never been successful with that, so it's kind of a mystery.
Smooth bark hickory, I tried tapping, nothing. I never got anything out of it.
The other thing I can mention about those two, hickory and ash, is that, you know, with maple and birch, you can, you know, the sap is flowing all throughout that tree. The heartwood's pretty deep, in other words, right? So you can harvest sap from the outer part of the sapwood or the inner part. I mean, it's running pretty deep into the tree too.
Yeah.
But with hickory and ash, it was pretty shallow. I mean, I don't think we saw any sap flow that was happening more than an inch deep.
Hmm.
So it's right around the outside, right under the bark.
That makes sense. I mean, just from injecting them with chemicals that kill the pesky emerald ash borer, the most active sapwood is right by the cambium.
That's true.
Say.
Yeah.
Huh. Hmm.
So I wonder, even just by tapping them, you're too deep then. Maybe you're walling that off, plugging it up?
We were kind of experimenting with shorter taps a little bit, too, and that didn't seem to help. I'm not sure if they were shallow enough or what, but, yeah, that's a good question.
Yeah. Beats me. Well, if you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is Sap and Syrup Beyond Maple with Crooked Chimney's David Moore. And when we return, we got a few more questions for David.
Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big grass bed. Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big grass bed. Whatever colors you have in your mind, I show them to you, and you see them shine. Lay, lady, lay, lay across my big breast bed. Stay, lady, stay, stay with your man a while. Until the break of day, let me see you make them smile. His clothes are dirty, but his hands are clean. And you're the best thing that he's ever seen. Stay, lady, stay. Stay with your man a while. Why wait any longer for the world to begin? You can have your cake and eat it too. Why wait any longer for the one you love when he's standing in front of you? Lay, lady, lay. Lay across my big breast bed.
Hey, lady, stay. Stay while the night is still ahead. I long to see you in the morning light. I long to reach for you in the night. Stay, lady, stay. Stay while the night is still ahead.
All right. You're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is sap and syrup beyond maple with Crooked Chimney's David Moore. He's over in Lee, New Hampshire. So let's talk about this ironwood, hop hornbeam, Astraea virginiana, not to be confused with blue beech or musselwood or hornbeam. We've noticed when you cut that tree, there is some sap flow coming out of it. So what's the deal?
Yeah, you're right, there is. I have harvested sap from it using a vacuum. It runs pretty late, kind of like birch does. And actually, since hop hornbeam, it's sort of an understory, a small understory tree, doesn't receive a lot of sunlight, and so it actually may run a little bit after the birches because, you know, birches get pretty big and warm up a little bit quicker, but when you're in the understory, it's a little cooler down there, so they may actually run a little bit, even after birches, a little bit. But unfortunately, I didn't get enough sap to actually make syrup from, so I'm just sitting on some sap samples on that one.
Okay. Yeah, because I've noticed, I've cut a few for firewood before, and just like birch, if you cut it in the spring, it flows out of the stump for a while, and you go back weeks or a month later, and it's covered in mold, right? So I would think it's, you know, it's sweet enough to make some syrup out of.
Yeah, I had five trees tapped, so five taps on vacuum, and that wasn't quite enough. But I have a hunch if I put a bunch more out, I certainly would have been able to make some syrup.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I'd like to try that. So we only got about three to four minutes left in the show. What other trees would you like to talk about, or what do you see in the future going?
Yeah, I mean, we'll certainly be testing, seeing what the chemical composition of these different saps and syrups are. So that'll tell us, we'll start doing that work this summer. That'll tell us, you know, of course, if there are any health or medicinal benefits or poisonous things we should be concerned about. But also, you know, it could tell us things about how to process the sap, right? For example, pectin. If there's something else that has a lot of pectin, that'll tell us that there's that extra step of filtering. So I'm excited about that. Another project we've got going on is, you know, you were talking about top hole lumber earlier. You have these streaks of dark brown wood above and below tap holes, right, which are no longer conductive to water because the sap, because you've drilled into the tree, and so those, you sever those vessels, they're no longer conductive. And some trees are much better at compartmentalizing the wounds, at sort of closing off the tap holes than others. You may be familiar with a study they did at UVM on maples and birches. And so we're going to do that work in some of these other species too, just seeing how well these trees compartmentalize their tap holes, and if they compartment, if they're good and they wall them right up and close them right off, and you could probably tap them a little more intensively than if they're not very good at doing that.
I would think some of these other trees might be guessing better than maple, like walnut and birch, just because making pruning cuts on them. Sugar maple doesn't handle a pruning cut nearly as good as a red maple, I've noticed, or a black walnut, for example. But I don't know. I don't know how it would stand up to tapping into the xylem.
Yeah, that's interesting. At least the people at UVM found that maple's quite a bit better at compartmentalizing wounds than birch is. And I think that, for example, poplar is another tree that I've worked with a little bit. And I have a hunch that poplar's actually much worse than even birch, because some of those early successional species, I mean, they prioritize growth over everything else, over defense, over anything else. So all the carbohydrates just go right into height growth so that they can shoot up and capture as much sunlight, and they're kind of short-lived.
Makes sense. Yeah, it makes sense. Yeah. Well, go ahead, John.
One last question. Do you have any research questions about oak? It's in the same family as beech. That's the only reason I ask.
Yeah. I think I actually haven't looked at oak yet, even though it's so abundant. Next winter I may put some sensors on an oak. The thing about oak, we haven't talked about this yet, is there's different types of wood porosities, different strategies for sapwood growth. And most of these trees are what's called diffuse porous. I don't think I have time to explain these right now, but oak is what's called ring porous, and ash is actually ring porous too. Right. And so there's different strategies there, and I'm not quite so sure that we'll have as much luck sugaring, you know, making syrup from ring porous trees like oaks and ashes that we will from diffuse porous trees like most of what we have, maples, cherries, birches, so on and so forth.
Yeah, that makes sense. Well, seems like there's a lot to learn, and thanks for taking the time coming on the show tonight, David.
Yeah, thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'd love to have you on again in a few more years when you've learned some more.
Sounds good. Thank you.
All right, take care.
All right, see ya.
All right, if you just missed the show, that was David Moore from Crooked Chimney. He's a grad student over at the University of New Hampshire. And, again, big props to maple, man.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I think that's what you learn about this is how amazing of a maple of a tree maple is, for how high the sugar content is. I mean, nothing even comes close.
No, even the close second, maple can triple its sugar content above it.
Yeah, I mean, we've had now, of course, we don't have as much experience tapping other trees, but I've had maple trees above 3%, almost 4%.
I mean, the best one behind this was birch. White birch at 1%.
Yeah, amazing. So that's all the time we have on From the Forest, and see you next week. We're going to talk to Tom Worthley from the University of Connecticut about Japanese barberry, Lyme's disease, and ticks. And take care.
All right, good night.
Oh, the neon lights were flashing and the icy wind did blow. The water seeped into his shoes and the drizzle turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining, face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their game. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river